A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He picked up a small rotary engraver, and it's been love at first use. He's using it to write 4-digit inventory IDs on tools, and he's discovered what a lot of people discover. When they try paint markers, they're finicky. Different surfaces, different results. He tried our tip about filling engraved grooves with a paint marker afterward, which he points out is clever because the paint sits in an eroded channel instead of sitting on top, where it gets scraped off. His actual question is, if you want to invest in a proper engraver and read a spec sheet intelligently, what are you looking for? Power ratings for different materials, battery versus corded, and where the real cutoff happens in terms of device strength. Let's build an educated guide.
This is one of those topics where the spec sheet looks like it was written by someone who actively resents the person reading it. You get numbers that sound precise but mean almost nothing until you know what's behind them. So let's start with the thing that actually matters most and that almost nobody talks about first, collet size. The collet is the little clamp that holds the bit. And on rotary engravers, collet size dictates everything. What bits you can use, how much runout you get, whether the tool is useful for fine work or just a vibrating noise machine. The most common sizes are 1/8 inch, 3/32, and 1/4 inch. The 1/8 inch collet is the standard for detail engraving. It takes the bits you actually want, carbide points, tiny diamond burrs, small ball mills. If you're doing 4-digit inventory IDs on tools, you want 1/8 inch.
What happens if you get the wrong size?
You end up with a tool that only takes those big grinding stones and cutoff wheels, which is fine if you're cutting rebar but useless for writing numbers. The collet is the first filter. If the engraver doesn't specify collet size, walk away. If it's a proprietary collet system that only takes that brand's bits, walk away faster. You want a standard collet that takes industry standard shank sizes.
Collet size is the handshake. If it won't shake hands with standard bits, it's not your engraver.
And the second thing, which is related, is runout. Runout is how much the bit wobbles off center when it spins, measured in thousandths of an inch. A good engraver has runout under 2/1000. A cheap one might have 10 or 15. At 15/1000 of runout, your 4-digit ID looks like it was carved by a caffeinated squirrel. The lines wander, the depth varies, and filling it with a paint marker afterward just highlights how wobbly the groove is.
The caffeinated squirrel is not the aesthetic most tool cabinets are going for.
It really isn't. And here's the thing, runout is almost never on the spec sheet. You have to infer it from build quality, bearing type, and honestly, reviews where someone actually measured it. Brass bushings mean more runout. Ball bearings mean less. If the tool has replaceable brushes, that's a sign it's meant to last long enough for precision to matter.
We've got collet size and runout. What about power? This is where I feel like the numbers get slippery. You see 6 watts, 15 watts, 35 watts, and none of them tell you what the tool actually does.
Power ratings on rotary tools are borderline fraudulent. Not because the numbers are fake, but because they're measured differently. Some manufacturers quote input power, what the tool draws from the wall. Some quote output power, what actually reaches the bit. The difference can be enormous. A tool that says 60 watts input might deliver 12 watts output. Another tool that says 20 watts output might be twice as strong as the 60 watt input tool.
When you see a wattage number on a listing, you don't actually know what you're looking at.
You don't. The only number that matters for practical use is torque at speed, and torque is almost never listed. What you actually feel is whether the tool bogs down when you press the bit into metal. A good engraver maintains speed under load. A weak one spins fast in air and stalls on contact. That's the real cutoff. Not the wattage on the box, but whether the motor has enough magnetic mass to keep turning when you're actually engraving.
Which brings us to the battery versus corded question, and I feel like this is where people get religious.
It's a genuine engineering trade-off, not a lifestyle choice. Corded tools give you consistent power and unlimited runtime. They're lighter because there's no battery. They're almost always more powerful per dollar. a $40 corded engraver will outperform a $100 battery, one in sustained use. The downside is the cord, which is genuinely annoying if you're walking around a workshop marking tools in different locations.
Battery tools have gotten a lot better. We're not in the nickel-cadmium era anymore.
Modern lithium-ion batteries in the 12-volt and 18-volt ranges are good, but you pay for it. A decent battery-powered rotary engraver with swappable batteries starts around $80 and goes up. The batteries degrade over time, figure 2 to 3 years of regular use before capacity drops noticeably. And when the battery is low, the tool slows down, which means your engraving depth changes mid-job. That's the hidden cost. With corded, your last engraving is as deep as your first.
Corded wins on consistency and value. Battery wins on convenience. Where's the cutoff where battery stops making sense?
If you're engraving steel or hardened tool surfaces for more than about 10 minutes at a stretch, go corded. The current draw on metal engraving is high enough that a battery tool either overheats or drains faster than you'd expect. If you're doing aluminum, brass, plastic, or short intermittent jobs, battery is fine. The other cutoff is if you're using larger bits, anything over about 3/32 shank diameter needs more torque, and that means corded or a very good brushless battery tool.
Let's talk about speed control. I see engravers that are single speed, variable speed with a dial, and then some that have electronic feedback that maintains speed under load.
The electronic feedback is the feature that separates tools worth buying from tools that will frustrate you. It's sometimes called constant speed control or electronic speed regulation. What it does is sense when the motor is slowing down under load and increases current to compensate. Without it, you set the speed, press the bit into metal, and the tool slows down, sometimes by half. With it, the tool fights to maintain the speed you set. For engraving, this matters enormously because cutting speed affects surface finish. A tool that bogs down creates chatter and rough edges.
Chatter being the technical term for that horrible juddering sound that means your engraving looks like a seismograph.
That's exactly what it is. And chatter is partly speed-related and partly rigidity-related. If the bit chatters, you're either spinning too fast for the material, feeding too aggressively, or the tool itself isn't rigid enough. This is where the physical build of the engraver matters. A metal housing is better than plastic, not because plastic breaks, but because plastic flexes. That flex translates directly into chatter. A metal-bodied engraver damps vibration better.
We're looking for metal housing, electronic speed control, standard collets, low runout, and either corded or high-quality brushless battery. That's the checklist so far. What about bits? Because the engraver is only half the equation.
The bit is where the actual cutting happens, and the material of the bit determines what you can engrave. Carbide is the default for metal. It's harder than high-speed steel, stays sharp longer, and handles the heat of engraving better. Diamond-coated bits are for glass, ceramic, and very hard steels. High-speed steel is fine for wood, plastic, and soft metals like aluminum or brass, but it dulls quickly on steel.
There's a geometry question too. Pointed bits versus ball end versus flat.
For inventory IDs, 4-digit numbers on tools, you want a carbide ball end bit or a carbide pointed cone bit. Ball end gives you a rounded groove profile that's easier to fill with a paint marker and less likely to create stress risers in the metal. Pointed cone gives you a sharper line, but also a sharper stress concentration at the bottom of the groove. For tool marking where the tool might flex, I prefer ball end.
You're saying the shape of the groove can actually affect whether the tool cracks.
A sharp V groove concentrates stress at the point. In a hardened steel tool that's already under load, that can be a crack initiation site. Is it likely for an inventory number? But it's real engineering. It's the same reason aircraft windows have rounded corners. Sharp corners concentrate stress.
We're doing fracture mechanics on our socket wrenches. I appreciate the thoroughness.
Look, if you're going to permanently mark a tool, you should understand what permanently means structurally. And this connects back to what the prompt mentioned, the combination of engraving plus paint fill. The groove protects the paint from abrasion. That's the mechanical advantage. The paint isn't sitting proud of the surface where it gets scraped off. It's down in a trench. The only way to remove it is to wear down the entire surface to the depth of the groove.
Which is why this method survives things that paint markers alone don't. I've seen paint marker labels flake off a wrench after a month in a tool bag. Engrave first, fill second. That label is there until the wrench isn't.
The depth matters. For a 4-digit ID with a paint fill, you want about 3 to 5 thousandths of an inch depth. That's deep enough to hold paint, but shallow enough that you're not weakening the tool. A good rotary engraver with a carbide bit can hit that in one pass on most steels. Softer metals might need 2 light passes to avoid burring.
Let's get into specific power levels for specific materials, because this is what the prompt is really asking. Where's the cutoff where a small engraver stops being useful?
Let's break it into tiers. The small engravers, the pin-style ones, often battery-powered, often marketed for crafts and jewelry, run about 3 to 8 watts output. They're fine for soft metals, plastic, wood, leather. They'll do aluminum and brass happily. They'll do mild steel slowly. They will not do hardened steel, stainless, or titanium in any practical way. You'll be there for 10 minutes per digit and the bit will be smoking.
The pen engravers that look like a thick marker. Those are the entry point.
The next tier up is the compact rotary tools. The Dremel class devices, though Dremel is a brand, not a category. These run roughly 20 to 40 watts output, take 1/8 inch collets, and have variable speed. This is the sweet spot for tool marking. They'll do hardened steel, stainless, titanium, slower than mild steel, but they'll do it cleanly. They have the torque to maintain speed under load. Most of them are corded, though there are battery versions now with brushless motors that are competitive. Above that, you're into die grinders and flex shaft tools, 60 watts and up, 1/4 inch collets, sometimes foot pedal speed control. These are for industrial marking, heavy stock removal, and engraving things like hardened tool steel dies. For inventory IDs on hand tools, this tier is overkill. You'll have more power than control, and the tool will be physically larger than you want for writing small numbers.
The cutoff for practical tool marking is basically, if you're doing aluminum, brass, plastic, wood, a pen engraver works. If you're doing steel, stainless, hardened tools, you need the Dremel class rotary tool. And if you're engraving tungsten carbide dies, you need the industrial tier.
That's the practical breakdown. And within that middle tier, there's a further distinction, the tool body shape. The traditional Dremel shape is a cylinder you grip like a thick marker with the bit coming out one end. That works for engraving, but it's not ideal. Your hand is far from the work, which reduces control. The better form factor for engraving is a pencil grip handpiece. Some rotary tools come with a flex shaft attachment that lets you hold a slim pencil grip handpiece while the motor hangs nearby or sits on the bench.
That flex shaft setup seems like the ergonomic sweet spot. Light handpiece, motor out of the way.
And it's not expensive. A decent flex shaft attachment is $20 to $30. The handpiece takes the same 1/8 inch bits. You get precision without fatigue. For marking dozens of tools in a session, the difference is night and day. Your hand isn't fighting the weight of the motor.
I want to circle back to something you mentioned earlier about brushless motors. What's the actual advantage for an engraver? Because I see brushless marketed everywhere now, and half the time it feels like a buzzword.
In a rotary engraver, brushless matters for 3 reasons. First, efficiency. A brushless motor converts more of the battery's energy into rotation, so you get longer runtime and less heat. Second, longevity. There are no brushes to wear out. A brushed motor in a rotary tool will eventually need brush replacement. A brushless one won't. Third, and most importantly for engraving, brushless motors typically have better electronic speed control because the control circuitry is already built in. The motor controller knows exactly where the rotor is at all times, so it can maintain speed more precisely.
The speed regulation we talked about earlier. Brushless motors do that inherently.
They don't do it inherently, but the electronics required to run a brushless motor are the same electronics that enable precise speed regulation. It's a package deal. A brushed motor can have external speed control, but it's usually cruder, just a triac chopping the AC waveform, which reduces torque at low speeds. A brushless motor maintains torque across its speed range.
Which means you can run slower for delicate work without the tool stalling.
And slow speed matters for certain materials. Plastics melt if you engrave too fast. Some metals work hardened if you generate too much heat. Having real torque at low RPM is useful.
Let's talk about a specific use case from the prompt. 4-digit inventory IDs on tools. The prompt mentions these are tools the user handles all the time. So we're talking about wrenches, sockets, pliers, maybe some specialty equipment. What's the actual setup you'd recommend?
For that specific use case, 4 digits, repeated across a tool collection, I'd recommend a corded rotary tool in the Dremel class, a flex shaft handpiece, a carbide ball end bit around 1/32 to 1/16 inch diameter, and an oil-based paint marker for the fill. Total investment somewhere around $80 to $120 if you're buying new. Less if you find a used rotary tool. These things last forever if they're not abused. Clean the surface first. Oil, dirt, and oxide layers will make the bit wander. A quick wipe with isopropyl alcohol is enough. Mark the number lightly with a pencil or a fine marker as a guide. Set the rotary tool to about 15 to 20,000 RPM, fast enough to cut cleanly, slow enough to control. Make one light pass to establish the groove, then a second pass at the same depth to clean up any chatter. Depth should be just enough to feel with the fingernail. Then wipe the surface clean, fill the groove with the paint marker, let it dry for about 30 seconds, and wipe the excess off the surface with a paper towel and a little alcohol. The paint stays in the groove.
That marking survives what?
Oil is no problem, it's below the surface. Most solvents won't touch it because the paint is physically protected by the walls of the groove. Abrasion is the real test, and this is where the depth matters. If the groove is 3/1000 deep, you can sand the surface lightly and the marking survives. If the tool gets dragged across concrete, eventually the surface wears down to the depth of the groove and you lose the marking. But that's true of any marking method short of stamping or etching deep into the metal.
Stamping brings its own problems. Stress risers again.
It's harder to do neatly on curved or irregular surfaces. A rotary engraver follows the surface contour naturally. A stamp needs a flat surface and a hammer blow. For something like a socket wrench, you're not stamping anything. It's curved and hardened. But an engraver with a steady hand will put 4 digits on it in 30 seconds.
I want to hit on something the prompt didn't ask directly, but that I think is worth addressing. What about laser engravers? Because those have gotten cheap. You can get a diode laser engraver for a couple $100 now.
Lasers are a different category entirely, and they have real advantages for certain tasks. A laser can mark materials that a rotary bit can't touch, glass, ceramic, anodized aluminum where you want to preserve the coating. They're also faster for batch work, and they produce perfectly consistent markings every time. But for tool marking specifically, they have limitations. A diode laser won't engrave bare metal. It'll mark it with an oxide layer, but that's a surface effect, not a physical groove. To actually engrave metal, you need a fiber laser, and those start around $2,000. A carbon dioxide laser won't touch metal at all.
The rotary engraver is still the right tool for this job. Physical groove, paint fill, done.
The rotary engraver is portable. You can take it to the tool chest, mark the tools in place, no setup, no ventilation, no eye protection beyond basic safety glasses. A laser needs an enclosure, exhaust, and a flat work surface. Different tool for a different workflow.
Let's get back to spec sheets. If someone is shopping online and looking at numbers, what are the red flags? What tells you a tool is junk before you even touch it?
First red flag, no collet size listed. That means it's probably a proprietary accessory system or it only takes bonded abrasive points. The pink grinding stones that come in every cheap rotary toolkit, those are useless for engraving. Second red flag, wattage, listed without specifying input or output. If it just says 60 watts with no further detail, assume it's input power, and the actual output is maybe 15. Third red flag, no mention of bearing type. If they won't tell you it has ball bearings, it doesn't. Fourth red flag, speed range that tops out below 20,000 RPM. Engraving with carbide bits wants 15 to 25,000 RPM. A tool that maxes out at 10,000 is for polishing, not engraving.
What about the opposite? A tool that advertises 35,000 RPM. Is that useful?
For engraving metal, no. At 35,000 RPM, a carbide bit in steel generates enough heat to damage the bit and work harden the steel. High speed is for grinding and cutoff work, not fine engraving. What you want is a tool that goes down to 10,000 or lower with good torque, not one that only works at maximum speed.
A wide speed range with torque at the low end beats a high maximum speed.
and this is where the cheat variable speed tools fail. They'll have a dial that goes from 1 to 10, but at 3 and below, the tool has no torque. You touch it to metal, and it stops. That's a sign of a simple triac speed controller with no feedback. The motor isn't being regulated, the voltage is just being reduced, and torque drops with voltage.
The dial is cosmetic if there's no electronics behind it.
Cosmetic is the right word. It gives you the illusion of control without the reality.
Which is a decent metaphor for a lot of cheap tools, honestly.
It really is. And the rotary tool market is especially bad about this because the Dremel brand established the category, and then 1,000 imitators showed up with tools that look similar but cut every corner. Plastic bearings, unbalanced armatures, collets that don't close concentrically. They vibrate, they're loud, and the engraving looks terrible.
Are there specific brands or models you'd point someone toward? Not an exhaustive list, but the reference points.
Dremel is the reference standard for a reason. The Dremel 4000 is corded, 1/8 inch collet, variable speed with feedback, ball bearing construction. It's about $70. The Dremel 4300 adds a few features. For battery, the Dremel 8260 is brushless, 12 volt, and good. Proxon is the German alternative. Their rotary tools are more expensive but have excellent runout numbers and very smooth operation. The Proxon IBSE is about $120 and is beloved by model makers and jewelers. Fordham makes the Flex Shaft standard. Their SR series is the industrial benchmark, but it starts around $300 and is overkill for tool marking.
On the budget end?
Wynn and TacLife make rotary tools in the $25 to $40 range that are surprisingly competent. The Wynn 235 is corded, variable speed, takes Dremel accessories, and costs about $25. The collet isn't as precise as a Dremel, and the runout is higher, but for occasional tool marking, it'll do the job. The key is to replace the collet with a genuine Dremel collet. They're interchangeable, and the Dremel collet is machined to tighter tolerance.
You can buy a $25 tool and a $10 collet upgrade and get most of the way there.
The motor might not last as long and the speed control won't be as smooth, but for marking a few dozen tools a year, it's perfectly adequate.
What about the really cheap pen engravers? The ones that are basically a vibrating stylus, not a rotary tool at all.
Those aren't engravers. They're electric scribes. They work by reciprocating a carbide point back and forth like a tiny jackhammer. They'll mark metal, but the result looks like a seismograph during an earthquake. The line width varies, the depth varies, and you can't fill it with paint in any clean way. They're fine for putting your name on a tool so it doesn't walk off the job site, but for legible 4-digit inventory IDs, they're the wrong tool.
We've established that the vibrating scribe is the glockenspiel of tool marking.
I'd say it's more the kazoo. It makes a mark, technically. Nobody's proud of the result.
Let's pivot to something practical. The prompt mentions using a paint marker to fill the engraving. What paint markers actually work for this? Because I've seen plenty of permanent markers that aren't.
Oil-based paint markers are the standard. Sharpie makes an oil-based paint marker that's widely available and works well. The medium point is about right for filling a 1/16 inch groove. The key is the oil base, which adheres to metal better than water-based paints and resists solvents better than lacquer-based ones. For high-temperature tools, things that get hot in use, like engine components, you want a high-temperature paint marker. Markal and Dykem make industrial paint markers rated for several hundred degrees.
Dykem is the blue layout fluid company.
Their paint markers are industrial. They're what machine shops use. The Markel Dura Ink series is rated to 500 degrees Fahrenheit and is resistant to most shop fluids. For tools that sit in a toolbox and don't get hot, the standard oil-based Sharpie is fine.
What about the application technique? Because I've seen people just color over the engraving and wipe, and the result is a smeared mess.
The technique matters. Engrave first, clean the surface thoroughly. Any dust in the groove will prevent paint adhesion. Then shake the paint marker well and press the tip down on a scrap surface to get the paint flowing. Fill the groove generously. Don't try to be precise, just get paint into the channel. Let it dry for about 30 seconds to a minute, depending on the paint. Then take a paper towel or a lint-free cloth, dampen it slightly with isopropyl alcohol, and wipe across the surface, not along the groove. Wiping across pulls the excess paint off the surface while leaving the paint in the groove untouched. If you wipe along the groove, you'll pull paint out.
Wipe across, not along. That's the kind of detail that saves someone 3 failed attempts.
It's one of those things that's obvious after you do it wrong twice. The other tip is, don't use acetone for the wipe unless you're sure the paint can handle it. Acetone will pull oil-based paint right out of the groove. Isopropyl alcohol is gentler.
Let's talk about safety, because rotary tools spin fast and carbide bits are sharp. What should someone actually worry about?
Eye protection is non-negotiable. Carbide bits can shatter if they bind, and the fragments are moving at high speed. Safety glasses, not just regular glasses, something with side shields. A dust mask is a good idea if you're engraving anything that produces fine particles. Aluminum dust is an inhalation hazard, and some steels contain chromium or nickel that you don't want in your lungs. And secure the workpiece. A tool that moves while you're engraving it is how you get a bit snapping and a hand slipping.
The bit itself. Any gotchas with mounting it?
Insert the bit fully into the collet, then back it out about 1/16 of an inch before tightening. If the bit shank bottoms out in the collet can't grip it properly. Tighten the collet nut firmly, not gorilla tight, but enough that the bit won't slip. And always run the tool at low speed for a second the first time you mount a new bit, just to make sure it's running true. If it's wobbling, loosen, rotate the bit a quarter turn, retighten. Sometimes that's all it takes to center it.
That's a lot of practical detail. I want to step back and ask the high-level question. The prompt is essentially asking, where is the value inflection point? At what price do you stop getting meaningful improvements and start paying for features you don't need?
For tool marking, 4-digit inventory IDs on hand tools. The value inflection point is around $70 to $100 for a corded rotary tool with a flex shaft attachment. Below that, you're making compromises in runout, speed control, or build quality that affect the result. Above that, you're getting features that matter for other applications. Higher top speeds for grinding, more accessories, industrial duty cycles, but don't improve the engraving result. The flex shaft handpiece is the one upgrade that changes the experience, and it's cheap.
$70 to $100 gets you the tool, the flex shaft, a few carbide bits, and a paint marker. That's the complete setup.
That's the setup. And it'll last years. The bits are consumables. A carbide bit doing steel will eventually dull, but it takes a long time for inventory numbers. Figure a bit lasts for hundreds of markings. The paint marker dries out eventually. But the rotary tool itself, if it's decent, will outlast the person using it.
The battery-powered option, where does that fall in the value curve?
Battery adds about 50 to 80% to the cost for equivalent performance. A corded Dremel 4000 is $70. The battery Dremel 8260 is about $120. The battery convenience is real, but you're paying for it. For someone marking tools in a fixed workshop, corded is the better value. For someone marking tools across multiple job sites, battery might be worth it.
The use case drives the power source decision more than any spec sheet number.
And this is where most buying guides go wrong. They compare specs in a vacuum without asking what the tool actually needs to do. If you're sitting at a bench with an outlet 2 feet away, the cord is not a problem. If you're crawling under a vehicle marking suspension components, the cord is absolutely a problem.
I want to touch on one more thing before we wrap the main discussion. The prompt mentions this was love at first use with a small engraver. There's something satisfying about engraving that I think goes beyond the practical result.
It's one of the few ways you can permanently alter metal with a hand tool and no heat, no chemicals, no setup. You pick up the tool, you write on steel, and it stays there forever. There's a directness to it that's rare in modern tool use. Most operations have layers of abstraction. You set up a machine, you program something, you wait. Engraving is immediate. The bit touches metal and the mark appears.
It's one of the oldest technologies we have, really. Scratching a mark into something hard. And we've just motorized it.
Added electronic speed control and carbide bits and flex shaft handpieces. But the principle is the same. A harder material removing a softer one in a controlled line. It's satisfying in a way that laser marking, for all its precision, isn't.
The laser feels like printing. The rotary engraver feels like writing.
For inventory IDs, which are, after all, just numbers you're writing on your tools, writing feels right.
Let's summarize the educated guide. If someone's shopping for a rotary engraver for tool marking, they should look at collet size first, 1/8 inch standard. Then runout, under 2/1000ths if they can find it specified, or inferred from ball bearing construction. then speed control. Electronic feedback is the feature that separates tools, then form factor, pencil grip, or flex shaft for control. Power source depends on where they're working. Budget $70 to $100 for a corded setup, $120 to $150 for battery. Carbide ball end bits. Oil-based paint marker. Wipe across the groove, not along it. That's the guide.
That's the guide. And I'd add, the best engraver is the one you actually use. A $300 Fordham that sits in a drawer because it's too much hassle to set up is worse than a $40 Win that's ready to go in 5 seconds. The tool has to fit the workflow.
The tool that requires a ceremony before every use is the tool that doesn't get used.
Unused tools are just very expensive paperweights.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In Inuktitut, a single word can express what English needs a full sentence to convey, a feature called polysynthetic morphology. The word Tusatsya Runangitwalujunga means I can't hear very well, built from a root meaning to hear, with suffixes stacking meaning upon meaning like linguistic Lego bricks.
I feel like that word describes my general state during early morning conversations.
That's one word? I need to sit down.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Our producer is Hilbert Fleming Top. You can find every episode at myweirdprompts.com or search My Weird Prompts wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back next week.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.